she get it straight. I'm gonna sing you a song, I hope that you get it straight. We got to change things around before it be too late. You know the government we got don't know what they're doing. You know the government we got don't know what they're doing. They're messing with our life, trying to call the country to ruin. Now this was messed up. You know they're giving to the rich and then they're taking it from the poor. It's called Bushonomics. They're giving to the rich and they're taking it from the poor. Spending all the money trying to start another budget breaking war.
And the Blues Survivors. Gotta make a change. Now, that is obviously a political song.
Yeah, I would say so.
Tell me something. Where do your politics lie?
Well, it's pretty evident in that song, I'd say. They won't be calling me up for any donations for the Republican National Committee, will they?
No, I don't think so. No. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what. We're not going to waste much more time on that.
No. This is a blues show.
This is a blues show.
And we got the blues.
Ain't it the truth? We do have the blues.
Yes, we do.
So I'll tell you what. We've got Mr. Mark Hummel sitting with us, and we're very, very pleased to have him on BluePower.com. A talented man like this taking his time to come down and sit and chew the fat with yours truly. I really appreciate that. And we were just outside catching a breath of air, and we were talking about the elder blues gentleman. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, who was it we were talking about? It was Steven Seagal, I believe,
right.
has
right.
Just put together a band. And why don't you tell us who the members are?
Well, all I know is they did a CD just while we were down in Arkansas in October. They were recording a CD down there in Memphis.
Yeah.
And I know the band he had with him was Pine Top Perkins on piano, Willie Big Eye Smith on drums, Bob Stroger on bass, Calvin Jones on bass, Robert Jr. Lockwood on guitar, James Cotton on harmonica. I mean, these heavyweight guys, and he was paying them good money to do this. And I think me and you were talking about just, you know, one of the guys in the band, you know, basically saying, you know, if it wasn't for this session, he wouldn't have been able to pay his bills.
Let's see.
And we're talking about legends that have played with everybody. And it's just, you know, it lets you know. It is sad.
That
and
they
how
don't...
the blues, how the blues, you know, is such a hand-to-mouth existence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There is an organization down south, and I can't think of the name of it right now, that actually takes care of the elder blues
folks. I know exactly what you're talking about, out of the Carolinas.
Yeah. I should look that up.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Music Relief.
There you go.
Yeah.
Music Relief.
Yeah.
And if these people don't have a place to go during their elder years, they actually take them in and support them, which I think is a marvelous thing.
Yeah, there needs to be more things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, these folks had it hard enough coming up and probably never got paid.
Yeah.
I know for a fact, as a white boy, I didn't get paid.
Right.
You know, so I certainly have, I can feel for these people who most of the time never got paid. I worked with John Lee Hooker, with Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry being notorious for not playing unless he got his money in front.
That's right.
We did a show at the Roxy, a live television show for Oak Media. I think it was in 1985, something like that, at the Roxy. And a special guest was Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck comes in. It's like, you know, probably 7:30, supposed to start at 8 o'clock. And so the dressing room girl, the call girl, comes in and goes, Mr. Berry, it's time to get up. He goes, where's my money? And she goes, well, I don't know anything about this, you know. Now, bear in mind, we had microphones all the way from down the hallway in the dressing room so we could catch him in the dressing room and coming out. So we got all this on tape. He says, I'm not setting foot on that stage until I get my money. And I think it was $25,000.
Right.
And he wanted cash.
Right.
You know. And the guy comes in. He goes, look, man, this is a corporation. Chuck Berry just laughed at him.
He said, man, I don't care.
He said, you get me $25,000. I'm not playing. Now, meanwhile, the people are sitting out there, Chuck Berry, we want Chuck.
It wasn't the first, and I'm sure it won't be the last.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the guy had to go out at 8 o'clock in the evening and come up with $25,000 in cash.
Wow.
Which he did.
Yeah.
And the minute that Chuck got it, he counted it carefully, put it in his pocket, picked up his guitar, bingo, hit the stage, did one hell of a show.
Yep.
But these guys just were never paid.
I've heard that story many times.
Well, I'm sure it's happened to you.
Oh, yeah. You bet.
Yeah, I didn't draw enough people. We didn't sell enough drinks.
There's been a couple times I had to take people to court over stuff like that.
Really?
I mean, one time I did a gig with Jimmy McCracklin. And we had a date set up, and the guy bailed on the date, I think, like maybe 3 days before the date.
Ooh.
And this was for about $3,000, something like that. This was a long time ago. This was 25 years ago. And I ended up taking the guy to court, and the guy filed bankruptcy. And after he filed bankruptcy, to get out of bankruptcy, he had to pay us.
So you got your money.
So I won, but I wasn't able to collect my money until the guy had to, after he filed for bankruptcy, he had to pay me
first before he
could get out of bankruptcy.
Well, you had a good lawyer.
Yeah, well, I think I was the lawyer, believe it or not.
Really?
As I recall, this was small claims.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I paid Jimmy his money, and I got my money for the band, and that was that. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, you got to be a hardcore businessman in this kind of music.
You got to be really,
and that's why Chuck Berry, I'm sure, is the way he is. Is you know, it's like you just, you know, a lot of the old blues guys, man, they carried a gun in their briefcase.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and it was like, it was a hardcore world, man.
Yeah.
Really hardcore world.
I was in a little band in early 60s for about 6 months, and we were on the road, and we wound up playing, we were in a place in Monroe, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And we played there a week, you know, it was one of those five sets a night,
right.
Six nights in a row.
Yep.
And the band left, and I was going to collect the money, pay the hotel bill, and meet them in Marshall, Texas, which mm-hmm. was the next gig stop that we had.
Right.
So I go to the club owner. Now, the band's left, so I'm by myself.
Wow.
And I go to the club owner. I said, well, you know, can I get paid so I can pay the hotel room and da-da-da-da-da? Well, I didn't make any money.
Right.
I said, how could you not make any money? The place was packed every night.
Yeah.
He goes, what, are you questioning me?
Yeah.
You're calling me a liar? He picks up the phone and calls his brother-in-law, who's the sheriff, and I wound up doing a week in jail in Monroe, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've played Monroe.
Yeah, so you know.
You know. I remember my gig in Monroe was some us playing the gig with a father and son out in front of the club with a full-size 12-foot cross out in front of the club, saying that we were playing the devil's music.
The devil's music.
And they were out front. I think his son was like this retarded kid or something. I mean, it was incredible. You know, there's some things that have happened on the road. I mean, you got, I'm sure, the same kind of stories.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like crazy.
So what was great was I was put in a jail cell with a black man. Okay. Uh-huh. And the police thought it was funny. Because we were both musicians.
Right.
So they let me have my guitar in the cell on the second day. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I'm sitting there picking and hadn't said much. The black brother hadn't said anything to me.
Right.
You know, and I start playing. I'm playing a little blues. And he goes, give me that guitar. And I, like, look at him and I hand him the guitar. And he starts playing. Okay. His name was Chuck White. He never made a record.
Yeah.
All he did was play, you know, just played for his own entertainment.
Right.
But he taught me some stuff that I have never forgotten.
That's cool.
You know, and you know why he was in jail? Because he couldn't pay a $28 electric bill. He had a wife and four kids, and he worked every day, sometimes 7 days a week, and he could not pay a damn $28 electric bill. So they put him in jail, made him work on the roads for a month to work it off.
Unbelievable.
Well, that's how, that's where they got the labor.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like the prisons.
That's how the blues was born, I think.
There you go.
That's how the blues was born. Yeah, that's one thing, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is John Reese, and you're listening to Blue Power Hour. I'm sitting talking to Mr. Mark Hummel, who's turned out to be one hell of a nice guy.
Well, thank you,
John. And a great musician, man. And normally I don't do this. Normally I only run 1 hour. But we're going to do two tonight because he has picked some incredible music, and he is a wealth of information. And I always like to learn new things. Why don't we, what should we play here? We got Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. We got Lowell Fulsom, Snooky Pryor.
Why don't you play some Sonny and Brownie, because those are two of the earliest guys I ever saw play.
Excellent.
Yep.
We're going to play Blowing the Fuses, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee.
Go ahead, blow the fuses.
Got to blow the fuse, man. We got to do it. We got to do it.
Lights out.
Well, I done blew the fuse. How you sound when you blow the fuse, man? Go out, Bronny.
Can't go out now. The lights ain't come on yet. This is the way to go. Look. Come again.
how you know we blow the fuel, man?
Lights out.
Lights out. Mr. Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. Blowing the fuses, man. They blew the fuse. They actually blew the fuse.
They blew the fuses. That's right.
Kept the machine
rolling. I guess
rolling.
The machines were going, but not the lights.
Doing it like a boogie in the dark.
That's right. They didn't stop.
Well, this is something that's kind of new for me. And I haven't felt this comfortable before with anyone that I've had on the show. And actually, for me to sit down and play. But I'm enjoying this man so much. Mr. Mark Hummel and I are going to make something up on the spot.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do a song I used to hear Brownie do all the time. I played a lot with him back in the 80s, and this is a song I used to hear him do, and we'll try it.
All
this
right.
is one called Stranger Blues.
Right on, man.
Here, just blowed in your town. I'm a stranger here, just blowed in your town. Just because I'm a stranger, everyone dog me around. Well, I wonder why treat a stranger so. I wonder why some people treat a stranger so. Well, he may be your best friend that you will never know. I'm gonna go back home without 99 pairs of shoes. I'm gonna go back home without 99 pairs of shoes. When I get back home, I won't have this stranger blues. Nothing more for me to do. I wanna leave this town. There's nothing here for me to do. When I get back home, I won't have this stranger blue.
Kept going, but I had my one hole plug up on me, so.
Well, that was fun, Mark.
Well, thank you. That was fun.
I got to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to see a man that smiles while he's playing, I got to tell you, you got to see Mr. Mark Hummel. You have just got to go out and see him. If he comes to your town, just go in there and say, Blue Power sent you, all right? He is one hell of a guy. And I'm sitting here playing, and I'm watching him play, and he is just smiling from ear to ear. Anyone who loves to play that much, you have got to hear.
Well, thank
Mark,
you very much.
You bad, my brother.
Well, thank you. I still love to play, I'll tell you.
Oh, man, I tell you, there's nothing like playing.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely nothing like that edge.
That's right.
That you get when you're playing.
That's true.
It's a pleasure to play with you.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Sound good yourself, man.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't get to play as much as I used
to,
or I'd like to.
That was easy, and that's the mark of a true professional. When it's easy, You're doing something right.
Well, listen, man. I always had a pretty good sense of time.
I can tell you do.
I like that. But maybe one of these days, man, we'll get to play together live somewhere. Make some more people smile.
That sounds good to me, man. That sounds good to me.
Listen, I wanted to ask you, do you have an agent or someone who books you, or do you do all that yourself?
I do a lot of the booking myself, but I've also got an agent or two out there that work for me.
They're independent, like you're not signed with any.
I'm not signed with anybody. No, I'm pretty much independent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a booking agency called UTR out there that's booking some festivals for me, and
some good people that are reliable, because I know.
It's tough to find people that will really do what I do, because I'm my number one fan. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, I'm going to go out there and keep us working 7 nights a week. And
yeah.
I've had a real hard time finding an agent that will do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you got a great band. How long
have you had the Blues Survivors together?
How long have they been together?
Well, they've been together. The guitar player has been with me now for about 8.5 years. Charles Wheel on the guitar. The bass player, Steve Wolf, 7.5 years. And the drummer, Marty Dodson, for 6.5. So,
yeah,
they've been together with me for quite a while. And we work a lot. We keep real busy.
Yeah.
You know, we work about 150 nights a year.
Amazing.
So, that's on the road,
And that pays your expenses and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we're able to make a meager living on it, but I mean, I'm a homeowner, so I mean, I'm doing all right.
Excellent.
You know.
Yeah, in these times, man, where the government's trying to wipe out the middle class.
That's right.
You're in pretty good shape and playing music, which is obviously, as I just watched, obviously what he loves to do.
Yeah, I do love to do it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Listen, if I were a novice harmonica player,
mm-hmm.
What would you tell me if I wanted to learn to play, or just learn to play a harp? What would your suggestion be?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I'm actually getting together with, I think I'm getting together tomorrow for breakfast with the guy that 35 years ago gave me all the pointers on how to play harmonica.
Who's that?
A guy named Mark Dawson, who used to play with Hoyt Axton for years.
My goodness.
Yeah. I don't know if you know him, but he played with Hoyt Axton for a long, long time and played in his band and on television with him and all on the road. And he basically, when I went to him, I was in high school. I was probably about 14, 15 years old. And I went to him and I said, "How do you play this thing?" And he said, "Well, check out this James Cotton record and check out this Paul Butterfield record." And he goes, "And bring me a six-pack and I'll show you everything you wanted to know." And he showed me how to bend notes. He showed me how to play vibrato with your throat. He showed me, I'm trying to remember, I think a head shake, which is, like that.
Yeah.
And so I think he might have showed me octaves. He didn't show me octaves. Somebody else showed me that. But he gave me the real important pointers on how to play.
One of my favorites is Jimmy Reed.
Jimmy Reed is one of my favorites as well.
And he played way up high.
Way up high.
Way up high. Yes.
Yeah.
And he did it with a neck brace, right?
Yeah, right.
It always amazed me, And I've tried to play harp several times and never could. I just never could get the hang of it, I guess it takes a special mindset to do it. But Jimmy Reed was a killer.
He played with a rack.
That's right.
And I actually got to play with the guy that played on all his records, Eddie Taylor.
What a guitar player.
And I saw Jimmy Reed 3 days before he died.
Oh, man.
And I got to meet him. Sonny Rhodes introduced me to him back in 74, 75?
Something like that,
76, like that.
Yeah.
76. And, he introduced me. He died in Oakland,
I saw him
in San Francisco 3 days before he died. And I'll tell you what, he was sober and he was magnificent.
I saw him in Atlanta.
He blew my mind.
About 6 months before he died.
Did you?
And his wife was on stage with him, sitting in a chair right behind him.
Yeah.
Giving him giving him the lyrics.
Yeah.
You could hear her.
Yeah.
And it sounded just like the record.
Yeah.
Well, we got a Jimmy Reed cut here. Which one did we get?
I think
get
you
here?
Got me dizzy.
You got me dizzy.
Yeah.
Why don't we play that right now? Since we're
I'd have to say he is one of my main influences as well.
and in the pocket.
Huge influence on me. You bet, man.
All right. Mr. Jimmy Reed, you got me dizzy.
Stop, 'cause you got me dizzy. Oh, you got me dizzy. Yeah, you got me dizzy. I can't even see my way.
You know, it's funny, you know, we were just listening to Mr. Jimmy Reed, and you got me dizzy. And I had taken it off the ARC. I think it's called 2120 South Michigan Avenue and Chicago's Chess Records. Great Blues, it's called. It's a great, great set of CDs. And I think it's a two or three record set, CD set here. But I thought it was distorted more than normal, so I went to another collection and found out it's exactly the same. So that record was pretty distorted when it was cut.
That's right.
So
yeah, a lot of those records, they cut them pretty hot back then a lot of times.
They, it's like Berry Gordy insisted on plus three.
Right.
I did a lot of work for Motown in the 60s. I lived in Detroit and cut a lot of product in Detroit and learned from those guys, you know, to cut it at plus three.
Yeah.
Because they wanted it plus three with all the compressors they could get on it to keep the level up there so that when the record went on the air,
That's right.
Came out nice and loud, as anything else, if not louder.
That's how I started mixing records, too. I'd always try to get them to go right on the edge of the red, you know.
Yeah.
Mastering and mixing.
That's mastering is a fine art.
You bet.
And there's some great people down here that do mastering. There's some great engineers down here as well. One of the things I like to do, I love to engineer.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things to do. Apart from playing, but I mean, just, you know, miking instruments and getting a sound on them and pushing it to the very top of the level without having it break up.
There's a lot of choices, too.
A lot of choices.
Yeah.
Are there any of the same old studios in San Francisco that used to be there? I know Wally Hyder's used to be there, but he's not there anymore.
There's
Wally's
one
gone.
Called, I think it was called Coast, on the edge of Berkeley, that the first record I did, I think we recorded there.
Yeah.
And that was... that was the one our Hooley did a lot of his, Chris Rockwitz did a lot of his records there at Coast Recorders. And that was a nice big room.
Yeah.
And that's still going, I think. But I'm not sure. It's different people now. Fantasy's still there.
Fantasy. Yeah. I worked for Fantasy World, Galaxy, Fantasy World, right. Pacific.
Right, right. And a lot of good blues records on
great
World Pacific.
Great stuff. And a lot of great jazz on World Pacific.
Mm-hmm. A lot of great blues on there, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, George Harmonica Smith
and
did one of my favorite albums on
Galaxy
there.
Had Little Johnny Taylor.
Little Johnny Taylor,
Part-Time Love, Part 1 and Part 2.
I still got that record.
Which is a great... Great! I promoted that record. That was I could not believe that record. I mean, I took that record into the South.
Did you really?
And
wow!
I took it into top 40 stations, and they played it.
Wow!
They literally played that blues record.
Amazing.
People in the Cemetery.
Yeah, that's right.
I love that line.
That's a great record, man.
Yeah. So, what are you looking to do now? I mean, with your career, are you just playing?
The big thing I've really put a lot of my efforts into lately have been these harmonica blowouts.
Yeah.
And really just kind of promoting like we're doing right now, promoting great blues harp and trying to, put it in front of audiences. I've done two harmonica meltdown CDs and the third one's coming out in the next month. And we're trying to get a fourth one going in January when I bring my harmonica meltdowns, hopefully down to L.A. We'll see. I know we got something in San Diego, and I'm trying to work out a L.A. date as we speak.
Well, you'll have to let me know when this is happening, because, well, one, I'd like to come and see it. Well, two, I'd like to promote it for you.
Yeah, this is happening about the second week in January, and right now we have the 10th, I think, booked at 4th and B in January. In San Diego, and I'm trying to book the 11th in L.A. So as long as I can find a venue to put the show on, I got a hell of a show. I got Magic Dick from Jay Giles' band.
Yeah.
I got Lee Oscar from War, and or I shouldn't say that, I guess. But Jerry Portnoy, who
Excellent.
Played with Muddy Waters
yeah.
and legendary blues band, and most recently Eric Clapton for the last
Didn't
10
he play
years.
With Bob Margolin too?
Yeah.
Some things?
Yeah. Him and Bob were in Muddy's band at the same time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Bob's a good
sure
player.
Were. Yep.
Bob's a good player.
Yeah, I just saw Bob down in Helena and Clarksdale. We did a big party for Pine Top Perkins down there. And me and Bob jammed a lot on that, and he jammed with us. I jammed with him, so had a real.
What's it like playing with Pine Top?
I've sat in with Pine Top, I guess three or four times, and the last time I remember it being a ball.
Yeah,
having a really good time. Yeah,
he's still old.
He's so old, but he's still so spry. Considering, you know, he's 92 now, he still gets up there and he can still play the damn piano. He can barely hear what, you know, what people are saying to him, but he can still play the damn piano. So.
He has that feel. He hadn't lost that.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No, he hasn't lost that at all. I think he's going to be playing till the day he drops, you know. That's what's great about a lot of those old guys. You know, if they can do that, that's what it's all about. You know, just play till you drop. You know?
What do they call it? Was it bop till you drop or something?
That's right. Yeah.
Listen, has anyone ever put a pickup on a harp?
Well, most harp players don't put pickups on the harp because there are guys that have done it. But the main thing most of the blues guys we're playing do, except for Sonny Terry and, say, Sonny Boy Williamson, is they would play with a what they call a bullet mic.
Yeah.
And it's usually either a Sure-Green bullet or an Astatic.
Yeah, a static.
Static JT-30.
That's an oldie.
Yeah, that is an oldie.
Yeah.
And they still make those. And they make both of those mics still. And you just cup it with both hands. You hold the harmonica with, like, your index finger and your thumb.
Yeah.
And then you hold the microphone behind that with the rest of your hands.
Yeah.
And you plug that into an amp, and you go.
Bingo.
Yeah. And that's what most of the harp players we're talking about today, you know, did in their day and still do. Now, some of the guys, like, for example, James Cotton, a lot of times he'll play through the PA because he gets such a hellacious tone without playing through an amp.
Yeah.
You know, but when he plays through an amp, it's even more so. So yeah. It's really special when he does. But he can get a hellacious tone just through the PA.
I loved working with him. We opened for him at a place called the Boston Tea Party.
Oh, yeah.
In 1969.
Wow, too much.
I remember we were going up in the band. I was producing this band for Capitol Records. It was a band from Ann Arbor, Michigan called SRC.
Huh.
You know, it was, I would say it was psychedelic music.
Right.
Okay. Really had no business being on a show with James Cotton. And going, I remember we had a B3 and going up the stairs. There, they had this double flight of stairs that you had to go up, and going up, taking the B3 up. The strap broke on the back part of the B3, and the B3, the guy at the back end, like, had to leap to the side, like, you know, ole, because here comes the B3, and the B3 went into the wall.
Unbelievable.
Destroyed the B3.
Jeez.
So, I mean, it was like the poor organ player had a Rhodes, but it certainly wasn't the B3.
No. No,
getting to play with Cotton, and it was so funny because Cotton came into the dressing room and he goes, "What you long hairs play? What you long hairs play?" Hey, got a joint?
Yeah, that sounds like Cotton.
He was great.
Yeah.
He was marvelous.
Yeah. He was a really nice guy. Or he was another one of the very first guys I ever got to see live and got to meet. And I saw him at the Ash Grove, and I remember going up to him. I couldn't have been more than 14 or 15, and I went up to him, and I said, "So, James, what's your favorite record?" He goes, "I like them all." I said, "I don't. I like those first two records." And he was so tolerant and so patient and so friendly still, even with that, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought back, look at what the hell was I saying, you know.
Well,
he was so nice about it that. It was, I always remembered that.
See, that's the amazing difference that I've found between the old blues guys that I had the opportunity to meet was their courtesy.
Yeah.
To me, as especially a young white boy asking
that's
a
right.
whole bunch of dumb
that's
questions.
Right.
Because I loved the music, they tolerated it.
And they picked up on that. They picked up on that, you know, if you were there and you were young, it was really something special to them, I think, to have young people, you know, coming up to them and asking them questions about the music, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got that from all of those guys. I mean, 99% of the guys I ever approached were so friendly.
The only guy that I say that, man, really was not courteous and was not kind at the later part of his life was Bo Diddley.
Hmm.
And
I wanted to do
an interview with him for Cashbox
magazine
because I just love Bo Diddley. I mean,
right.
you know, the guy that who set up that dunk 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 dunk.
What do they call it? Two bits and a hair.
Right, something like that. Yeah. And
two bits, a shave, and a hair.
Right, but he absolutely he wasn't moving nowhere unless he got paid. And that was, even if it would have done him some good, you know. And I wanted a picture, and they couldn't get a picture.
Hmm.
They couldn't get him to send me a picture. Maybe he was just in a bad mood. I sure
hope
so.
Must have been.
I know, but.
Well, speaking of Bo Diddley, I think you should play something off of that Billy Boy Arnold CD that I produced, because that's the guy that Bo started with.
Excellent. All right. Well, I tell you what. What you want to do? Here's my picture.
That's a good one.
Is that a good one?
And those two together were the creators of the Bo Diddley beat. Did you know that?
Oh no. Did he play with Bo Diddley?
He played on the original "I'm a Man," and he played on I think some other ones. Bo Diddley.
So he played harp.
He played
on
the
that.
Original harp on
I'll
Bo Diddley.
Damn.
Yeah, and they had a band together, and the way Billy Boy tells the story, this is an interesting story, and I think it's in the liner notes that I wrote. What happened was they were playing on the street.
Yeah.
And there was a guy that called himself Bo Diddley that was a dancer that was on the street. And so when they went in and cut for Leonard Chess said, "What do you call this song?" This was the first time they went in and recorded for Chess Records. And Leonard Chess said, "What do you call a song?" And they go, "I don't know." You know, and this was the song Bo Diddley, yeah, right? And he said, "Well, we got to call it something." And so Billy Boy said, "Well, why don't we call it that? Let's name it after that guy Bo Diddley, the dancer." And he said, "Yeah, that's what's that mean?" He goes, "That's a dancer that dances on the street by where we play." And so apparently that was what Leonard Chess put on the title. And then instead of using Ellis McDaniels, which is Bo's real name, yeah, they put Bo Diddley by Bo Diddley.
By Bo Diddley.
And that's he how began, he supposedly got the name. Yep.
I'll be darned. See, I didn't even know that.
Yep.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
I didn't know it until Billy Boy told me that this year, and I've known Billy for 15 years.
Well, let's play. Here's my picture. Billy Boy Arnold, produced by Mr. Mark Hummel.
Well, now here's my picture, baby. Please keep it in the frame. Well, here's my picture, baby. Please keep it in your frame. Now when I'm not around, you'll see Billy Boy just the same. Well, you told me that you love me, baby, and you told me a lie. You told me you love me, and you told me a lie. I don't know, baby, I could lay down and die. Well, you told me that you loved me. You said your love was true. But I can't hold without, baby. Living without you, you got me crying. I don't feel so fine. You got me crying, baby. I don't feel so fine. You're driving me crazy. I'm almost out of my mind. Said your love was true, but I can't hold out, baby. Living in this world without you, you got me walking in my sleep. See what you're doing to me. You got me walking in my sleep, baby. See what you're doing to me. Woman, you're driving me crazy. I'm in misery. I'm in misery. Well, now here's my picture, baby.
Mr. Billy Boy Arnold. Here's my picture, baby. Song is produced by Mr. Mark Hummel. It is really a nice album. Let me see. Billy Boy Arnold. Consolidated Mojo.
Yeah.
I like that. And so this is the man who played harp on all the Bo Diddley stuff.
Well, not on all of it, but he played on the earliest the earliest Chess records.
The beginnings.
I'm
right?
A Man he's on, and I think he said he was on the song Bo Diddley. I don't remember, but that's what I was told.
Did he play on Who Do You Love, or do you know his Mona, any of those?
Whatever, you know, the three harp players that are on Bo's records are Little Walter,
yeah,
Billy Boy, and a guy named Lester Mad Dog Davenport. Those are the three harp players.
Lester Mad Dog Davenport. Yeah. Now that's a new one for
Lester
me.
Lester Davenport was on Pretty called?
Pretty Thing.
Pretty Thing. That's Lester Davenport. But I think on, what's the number that, Diddley Daddy is Little Walter.
Okay.
And there's another one that's just like, Little Walter actually had Bo play on some of his cuts. For example, Bo Diddley's playing on things like Hate to See You Go by Lil Walter.
Really?
He's playing on Roller Coaster by Lil Walter.
Playing guitar, you're talking about.
I'm talking about Bo's playing guitar on them.
Yeah, and he played like open E, right?
I guess so.
Yeah, he played with... Yeah. I saw him...
But I mean, you can tell on this cut right here that we just played. I mean, that was a song that was cut on VJ at the same time as Bo was cutting his stuff. And that's a very similar beat, as you notice,
exactly,
on the drums.
Yeah.
So these guys were both recording those I call them jungle beats, or you could call them a mambo beat or whatever you want to call it when you're playing on the toms.
Yeah.
That was very much a thing that only those two guys were really doing in Chicago, and it was because they were playing together.
When was this released, this album?
This was just released this
year. Just released.
Yeah, in the last
three months. So if you want, if you like that, if you like Here's My Picture, you're going to like the rest of this album.
Yeah.
Mr. Billy Boy Arnold. It's called Consolidated Mojo, and it's on Electrify Records.
Right. And this was cut with my band when I brought Billy Boy out to California. I brought Billy Boy and Jimmie Rodgers out to California about 92.
I'll be done.
We did a little tour, and when we got done, we recorded this.
Where did you record it?
In San Francisco.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
You did it coast? Or?
No, we did that at a friend of mine. Almost everything I recorded up until just recently, I recorded at a friend of mine, Dave Wallhausen's studio,
okay,
which was originally called John Altman Recorders.
Oh, okay. It's like in his house or...
No, it's in a studio.
In a studio, yeah, actually.
Studio, I'm trying to remember the name of the street it's on, but yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we got time for one more cut.
Okay.
And what would you like to play? I mean, we got Frank Frost, we got Louis Myers, we got Otis Rush, we got Bobby Bland.
Let's go out with since we're so on a harmonica kick here. Let's go out with that Louis Myers one, because that's a great cut. Either that or Sonny Boy. I don't know, Sonny Boy might be a good one.
It took me a long time to find out my mistake. Took me a long time to find out my mistake. It sure did, man. But I bet you my bottom dollar I'm not fighting no more frog for snakes. I started checking. I found out my downfall from 1930. I'm telling all of my friends I'm not fighting no more frog for snakes. All right now. Correct all of my mistakes. Whoa, man, 1957, I got to correct all of my mistakes. I'm telling my friends, including my wife and everybody else, not fighting no more frog for snakes.
Going to feature our drummer Marty Dodson on this one, but we need your help, so everyone clap your hands along with us on this one, okay?
Oh,
This is John Reese of BluePower.com, and we've had a wonderful time this evening sitting here talking to Mr. Mark Hummel. He is the man. The man knows about his harps, and he knows how to play music, and he dearly loves it. You have got to get out and see this man play. I guarantee you, you will have one marvelous time. Mark, thank you so much for being with us, man.
Thank you,
really,
John.
appreciate it too.
Oh, man. Great time with you.
Yeah, I mean, most people are in a hurry to get out of here, man, and we've just had one great time.
I have the afternoon off. Sound good.
Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, John.
All right, so remember, you get a chance, see Mr. Mark Hummel and the Blues Survivors. All right, a great band. Or Mr. Billy Boy Arnold. Go out and see these people. Mr. Johnny Dyer.
There you go.
Mr. Hummel has a great deal to do with all of them. He's got his fingers in the music business, and he's having a wonderful time. Let me get some plugs in here. There don't seem to be any festivals coming in the near future. So if you know of a festival coming to your area, please let us know so that we may announce it. Our dear friends down in Orlando, Florida, at Smokestack Lightning are tearing it up. Be sure you tune in to Smokestack Lightning to hear their top 10 CDs of the month and their picks of newly released material. Mr. Tommy Thompson is one hell of a blues man, and he sure can pick them. In fact, I listen to Smokestack Lightning just to make sure I haven't missed anything. By the way, Mark, if you were down in Orlando, you have got to stop in to see these people. If you're going to be down there, let me know. I will let them know you're coming, because I know they'd love to have you.
All right? On the drum, all right?
And if you're into Northern Soul, there really is no better place to hear your favorites than Blue Power UK and Mr. Mark Hansen. Mark has an uncanny way of selecting just what you want to hear. He even plays some of my records occasionally. Thank you, Mark, and that's Blue Power UK. I'd also like to thank the folks who sent us product this week. That's Blind Pig Records in San Francisco, Mr. Ed Chmielewski, Mr. Doug Deutsch, PR in L.A., Miss Julie Doppelt-Boyer of Hoopla, PR in L.A., and Crosscut Records in Germany. Thank you all from Crosscut. Got some good stuff in. Going to be playing it for you soon. And not to mention all the independent artists who send their music. We listen to everything and try to play anything that fits our format. However, we are selective. I'd like to thank Mr. David Perlman, for the great microphone he built for me. The Perlman microphone, nothing but the best for yours truly. And last but not least, thanks to Big Valley Dodge and Subaru for helping keep Blue Power on the air. Family owned for over 40 years, Big Valley is the place to go for Dodge and Subaru automobiles. Now we're going to get out of here, listen to Mr. Mark Hummel a little bit more. Thank you so much for listening to Blue Power. We love you. Take care of yourselves and be good to yourself.